So we're doing this episode of Yoded in Shigmanitu's car.
We're here in spirit. Well, you're here in spirit, eh?
Yeah.
Since you couldn't make it to Boston.
Yeah. So we have gone on hiatus unofficially with Yoded. You know, there's a lot of restructuring going on right now with the podcast. We have a lot of various projects underway. We published a book. So we appreciate people's patience with us. But also, you know, part of the delay is because you and I have been doing an extensive amount of research on several projects that we haven't really publicly announced yet. But we wanted to have a conversation about some of the research that we've been doing, specifically on the U.S. intelligence state and the kind of deep-seated covert operations that we often associate with the 60s and the 70s with the counterintelligence program through the FBI or Operation Chaos, through the CIA. But we wanted to kind of do a special episode today about signature reduction, which is a it's hard to describe. It's a Pentagon created undercover army that in the last decade, with about 60,000 people in its employment, which includes private security contractors as well as government employees who are working under masked identities and keeping low profiles, not only in several, you know, in many countries throughout the world, but also domestically. And this, the size of this, just to kind of put it into perspective, is 10 times the size, the secret, 10 times the size of the secret elements of the CIA. And I don't know, Shigmanitu, do you want to just kind of give an overview of this particular program? It was released, you know, there was an expose done in Newsweek in May about it. But since then, it hasn't really gotten a lot of coverage. So it's kind of an interesting element of the deep state, so to speak. But it connects to a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about, you know, in terms of government informants and infiltration, specifically of indigenous movements. But I don't know if you want to go do an overview of this particular program, you know, and what it entails and what it's actually trying to accomplish.
So overall, Operation Signature Reduction, I mean, like, it's hard to call it even that, because that's sort of like adheres back to like even how COINTELPRO is used to just generally describe many different aspects of like similar operations. And so Operation Signature Reduction, like in the article from Newsweek, is repeatedly described as an artistic label, which is like, I don't know if that's like ultimate liberalism where you're like, yeah, clandestine surveillance of domestic and foreign affairs for nefarious, I'll use that loosely because that's kind of moralistic or whatever, but if it's the U.S., it's evil. They're just like, they're talking about it like it's an art form, and they're very much like happy with the work they do. And so like stuff like Mockingjay, I think, would fit under the label of signature reduction.
And what is Mockingjay?
Mockingjay is an operation to install basically CIA agents into the media in order to push certain propaganda. And so one example that could be alleged, I'm going to use that heavily, is like people who interned with the CIA and have initials of AC and possibly worked on CNN. I'll let you put that out, figure that one out. But
the Silver Fox, I think that's his. That's Anderson Cooper's CIA name. I'm just kidding.
Is it actually?
No, I have no idea.
I hope it is. I hope that's what they called him. But Silver Fox is one good example. I mean, another one I think is Jim from The Office. That's just because he put out a whole video about how, you know, CIA agents, they're just doing what they have to do, you know?
They're just normal guys. And one of the things they have, they're just 9-to-5 blue collar workers.
Regular old Joes, really, they're analysts. And I honestly think that joke's a cover for the people who in the article are described as maintaining these fake identities. Hmm. And these fake identities are meant to create entire personas for people to operate in the social media sphere in order to push certain lines. Like, who knows? you know how they're always talking about Russian bots? The reason why they're talking about Russian bots is because there's American bots. Everything they say about another country, especially in this article, we are probably doing. And then either A, saying they're doing it, or they're probably doing it too, just in order to counter-react our program, which I believe is going further than the article really wants to talk about. Because I feel like COINTELPRO has just become signature reduction, you know. And COINTELPRO is like a huge part of the research that we do as far as like with AIM and stuff.
Right. And just to kind of give listeners a background on what COINTELPRO is, or was, I should say, because it technically ended in 1971, and it wasn't just like one big operation. It was based on several campaigns. Yeah, and so they would do what would be called a COINTELPRO against a certain particularly left-leaning. It was actually created to go to attack the Communist Party, but it also included going after the Socialist Workers Party, you know, black nationalist hate groups, quote unquote, such as the Black Panthers, the Black Panther Party, and also the Southern Christian Leadership Party, which, you know, Martin Luther King was a part of, and, you know, also the New Left. But it also infiltrated, you know, to its credit, I guess, it infiltrated the Klan. And I remember reading, I read a book by on Malcolm X. It's the new biography called The Dead Are Rising. And in that, I can't remember the journalist's name, but the guy who wrote the book found FBI documents from informers within the Klan when Malcolm X was sent by the Nation of Islam to actually meet with the Klan and to potentially establish some kind of detente between black nationalists and the Klan itself, almost trying to, as if, and the, you know, it's an FBI COINTELPRO operation. The author suggests that perhaps they were trying to discredit Nation of Islam for meeting with the Klan in some ways, you know, but also, you know, the documents themselves of that meeting are kind of suspect as well, because we don't know Malcolm X's intentions. We do know that he was, you know, a strident anti-Klan person, but nonetheless, the COINTELPRO officially began in 1956 and targeted the Communist Party, and officially ended in 1971 with the threat of public exposure after the citizens, I think it was called the Citizens Review Committee, broke into a Pennsylvania FBI office looking for, you know, counterintelligence that was gathered by the FBI, specifically on anti-war activists. And they only found one document that actually mentioned COINTELPRO, and they didn't really know the significance of it at the time. But, you know, they sent the documents that they did acquire to various news outlets. And I think it was the Washington Post that was the only one brave enough to publish it. And in fact, several congresspeople refused to make them public and refused to do investigations because, much like today's climate, whether it's whistleblowers or where there are leaked documents, people, you know, attribute it to an act of treason. But of course, these people, they later came, you know, they later became public about their actions to kind of just show the world that the reasons behind this, you know, breaking into this office, because, you know, they were people who were like middle class, you know, white folks who were against the war, and many of them had experience breaking into draft card offices and burning draft cards. And so they use that experience to essentially break into an FBI vault, which, you know, wasn't very well protected. It was, I think it was just like it was secured by a deadbolt. And they found all these documents, you know, and forced the hand of the FBI at the time, which further discredited the FBI, you know, moving into Watergate and things of that nature. But there was a church, there's what was called a church committee that did an investigation, not only on the FBI, but also on the CIA and military intelligence and their domestic surveillance and spying programs. And so basically what the FBI did, and I think this gets ignored a lot, is that the FBI was primarily concerned about left organizations' ties to foreign governments, specifically the Soviet Union, and later on, of course, China. But this, you know, this was an attempt to kind of, you know, gain entry and a top level leadership within organizations. The movie that came out about the assassination of Fred Hampton, Judas and the Black Messiah, kind of exposed how Fred Hampton and the Black Panther Party were targets of several COINTELPRO operations, you know, that worked hand in glove with the, you know, local law enforcement. I don't think that, you know, the Chicago Police Department was as sophisticated as the FBI in terms of its surveillance. They were kind of more bagmen, or the kind of the muscle, so to speak, of operating on these, you know, these counterintelligence programs, which were aimed to essentially disrupt and discredit left movements and anyone associated with them. And Martin Luther King Jr. was a target of a COINTELPRO operation, specifically because his lawyer, whose name escapes me at the moment, was associated or was the a lawyer for the Communist Party of the United States of America. So their main goal was to protect national security, you know, quote unquote. But they took covert actions that were adopted from techniques used by the CIA against, and this is a quote from the church committee, against, quote, hostile foreign agents, and were adopted for use against perceived, quote unquote, domestic threats. So this, you know, the other purpose was, quote unquote, preventing violence, maintaining the existing social order, which essentially meant waging political violence against perceived, quote unquote, political threats internally within the United States. And essentially the tactics were foreign espionage, you know, brought home. The tactics that they used overseas through the Office of Strategic Services during World War II, which later evolved into the CIA, became techniques used for domestic, you know, counter-surveillance programs and counterintelligence programs. And it also is worth pointing out that the FBI itself was founded, you know, intentionally to essentially undermine and destroy and discredit the Communist Party, more specifically, but also, you know, of course, that extended to anarchists, who were, many of whom were foreign-born in the 1920s. But nonetheless, the FBI has created this kind of image of itself as a crime-fighting organization. And we can see, like, with, you know, the exposure of the crime boss, like Whitey Bulger, that these informants and infiltrators of, you know, even crime organizations were given wide latitude to essentially commit murder with impunity. So, you know, that's kind of going beyond the scope of, you know, this conversation, but just to sum up some of the tactics.
But I don't think it does, actually. Yeah, I think, well, like, with the CIA crack program and stuff, you could almost say that, like, organized crime is a way for the CIA to funnel money, which is mentioned in the article, that right. They embezzle money and pay banks to look the other way. Like, they literally admit to embezzling stuff. Why not embezzle drug money if you can? Like, I think it's just that the American government is okay with drug smuggling, like, with as much drug traffic as they can, just like they were with the crack epidemic.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of like what, you know, the exposure of Whitey Bulger was about, in the sense that he was basically operating a, you know, FBI-backed criminal organization. And of course, to kind of bring it up to, you know, current times, there's this huge, you know, controversy in liberal and conservative media about the role of the FBI in the Capitol riots. And, you know, you and I were discussing before we got on the phone about, you know, what level of complicity the FBI had in actually orchestrating the events of January 6th is up for debate, because I honestly don't think we will know for sure. But what we can read in the affidavits, as well as some of the, you know, the charges that were taken from testimony from highly placed FBI informants within, you know, organizations such as the Proud Boys, we found out that the top leader of the Proud Boys himself was an FBI agent. I would say that I don't think the FBI necessarily orchestrated the events of January 6th, but they knew what was going to happen. And they had inside knowledge of the kind of key players and the events that would unfold, and they kind of stood by and, like, let it, you know, let it Obama was famous for saying during the Dakota Access Pipeline protest, letting it play out to see where the chips fall, so to speak.
Well, and then another thing to look at that I was thinking about is like how people talk about how the police just like stepped aside and some even opened up the barricades to let people in.
Right.
You know, they lit like either A, somebody on the inside of the police was also working with somebody on the inside of the Proud Boys to orchestrate this, or, you know, it just they're all together because they like Trump. I don't know. You know.
I think the simpler explanation is more convincing in that, I don't remember the statistic, but it was like 99% of law enforcement, active law enforcement supports Trump, and many of the people who participated in the Capitol riots themselves were off duty or former law enforcement or were active military or ex-military. And so I think there's a culture created, and this is getting way off topic, but there is a culture created amongst law enforcement agency, historically, that it itself, the modern policing as we know it today evolved from Irish gangs in New York. That essentially took over the police, the police agency, the institution of the police, and many of the ideas of like the code of silence and thin blue line, are really kind of like gang mentalities, imbricated or imbued within modern policing as we know it. And we saw like LASO, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, actually leading some gangs in some instances, and actually created a sheriff's gang in LA County that was functioning as, like they were doing extortion campaigns and things of that nature. And so I think the lines, especially in these counterintelligence operations, get really blurred between, what is considered quote unquote legal, and I'm using that in a very like broad sense, legal activities to those that include either explicit encouragement of extra legal activities or illegal activities such as violence, or turning a blind eye, so to speak, towards those activities themselves.
But well, like the one paragraph I would probably like actually like to quote is, as one official explains it, this includes a clandestine bill paying, like they pay the bills of these people, keep paying social security payments for them, they keep a real credit score for these people, and even when they go back to their like regular lives or whatever other life they're gonna go live, these people still exist technically on the roll books, you know. So I guess like when, I mean, not to give too much credit to the conspiracy theory about the Republicans, but I wonder if they do vote too. You know
Oh,
what I
I can imagine that they do.
mean? Like there's a lot of things to wonder about this. And I mean like they call them special access programs where it's like meant to defeat biometrics with like different disguises and stuff like that. And one of their designs is a glove that fits over your hand so perfectly you would never be able to notice it. And I mean, I 100% believe that because I remember watching this documentary about how we're getting close to 3D printing hearts with stem cells.
Right. If you read the article, and we'll post it in this in the show notes, but there are like accompanying pictures of like people wearing masks. I think the mask is like actually really absurd. It looks
No,
like
but I think those are the
a
worst of them. Those are like prototypes.
But I think
Obviously, they're not going to show you how great it is because they want you to believe that the CIA and FBI are like fumbling idiots. And that's why even like when it gets to this the Q person that goes, what's her name in this? I don't know, some fake white name. Oh, what is her name? Brenda Connolly. Oh, there's the Irish. Anyway, that's not her real name, obviously. But she talks about how there was this phone that they got from the Ryan Fogel incident where he was arrested or whatever, and there because he was trying selling secrets to China or something like that. I can't really remember the story. He had a bunch of different stuff that looked like ordinary things, but in reality were covert items that you could use. And like you can look at the picture of it. It looks like everyday things that somebody might just have in their
And
backpack
just
over
for clarification, we're talking about Q from James Bond, not
Oh, yeah, not QAnon. Oh, yeah, my God. QAnon. But then you got to ask yourself, is it a CIA agent's job to maintain a Q profile along with the 4chan dude or whatever?
I don't know. I think, honestly, think that they are either tied. I mean, the documentary I saw with HBO kind of hints at the fact that they have intelligence ties. I mean, the I can't remember his name. It's one of the Watkins. It's the father.
I need to watch this documentary still, but
he was actually, I think, his name is Ron Watkins. Ron is his son. Ron is the son. Ron Watkins is the son. Jim Watkins is the father. And he was a naval intelligence officer. So at least that's what he said in the documentary itself. So he has military intelligence, a background, and also that would include a security clearance. So I totally don't doubt that there are, you know, do intelligence people really retire when they retire, you know?
Probably not.
So, but the other, you know, the other part of this article that, you know, I felt was kind of interesting is that there's a quote, it says, signature reduction is thus at the center of not only counterterrorism, but is part of the Pentagon's shift towards great power competition with Russia and China. Competition, influence, and disruption, quote, below the level of armed conflict, or what the military calls warfare in the gray zone, a space in the peace-conflict continuum. And actually, after reading
Cold
that...
War.
Yeah, after reading that, I was like, oh, that's what that's why the gray zone calls itself the gray zone, the media outlet with the podcast series, because I never quite understood, but it's essentially like,
oh,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it took me forever to figure that out. And after reading this, now I know why it's called the gray zone. But it's that space, that ambiguous space, you know, that the military or the defense community likes to talk about. That's in between the peace and conflict continuum, right? So there aren't really hot wars. Everything is kind of in the gray zone. So therefore, making any potential territory, country, or, you know, uprising a space of, you know, conflict or intervention, right? And I think this kind of slides into what, you know, Vijay Prashad and the Tricontinental call the hybrid war, which isn't like necessarily using the traditional, you know, overthrow techniques of, like, you know, military coups and military intervention, but using a combined effort of media warfare, law warfare, as well as sanctions and economic warfare to make countries more compliant, or at least to punish those countries that fall outside of, you know, U.S. hegemony.
I mean, like, it really does focus on the China angle. I really viewed this, like, an entire article as, like, a reveal of this program, but in order to get you to be sympathetic by going, oh, but we're doing it to protect us against China and Russia, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, one of the biggest examples is that, like, they keep just throwing China in there everywhere they can. Mallory mentions that she had fake vials of blood provided by China, but then wouldn't mention why. So it's like, why give out that piece of information? There was another interview with another person like this. I think it might have even been the same person that the Washington Post was talking about. And they expand on this where she talks about a puppet. And so, like, a lot of people's first thoughts might be just like a regular old puppet. But what if it's like for a public official? You know what I mean? Like, what if Prince Philip, the one that looks dead, that photo? What if that was a puppet? He's been dead for a long time. But there's just like a lot of different things you can think about and go, oh my goodness, what do they mean by puppet?
Well, yeah, I mean, the photos, I mean, everyone should go check it out. The photos, like, of the hand, you can't tell the difference between, like, whether it's a real or prosthetic hand. And I mean, I'll be honest, like, there is a little bit of a propaganda, I guess, in this, in the sense that it's like trying to make the CIA sound really cool. And it's not to say that these, you know, like you said earlier, that these operations aren't for nefarious means. And obviously, you know, really blurring the boundaries between what could be considered like covert and undercover action and the compromising the integrity of like the sovereignty of foreign nations by spying on them and also lying, down to the level of biometrics, like hiding one's fingerprints. The blood vials, I imagine, would be to hide, somebody's signature in their own like bodily fluids. There's other ones that they use to mess with facial recognition. But this, speaking of this, like there was particular piece that you're talking about the Kevin Patrick Mallory. It's like 6 years later, another espionage case hit the news, this time when a jury sent former American military intelligence officer Kevin Patrick Mallory to 20 years in prison for conspiring to sell secrets to China. There was nothing particularly unique about the Mallory case, the prosecution making its own showing of presenting the jury with a collection of wigs and fake mustaches looking like Halloween costumes. The whole thing seemingly another funny episode of clumsy disguise. And I think they actually show a photo of it where he's like, he just, or there's a different photo of a guy. He's trying to like hide his face. And he obviously is wearing like a fake mustache and a wig.
Yeah, I love these photos. I love the photos of that. With the Mallory case, like they actually talk about that connects to what's called covert communications or CovCom, where like stuff is like made into bricks, like communication devices are put into bricks that they install into buildings and stuff like that. Where like either all the CIA person has to do is like pre-write communications, walk by it, it transmits covertly. And all that information gets processed, or they could put in a microphone that could you could actually talk to, and that was revealed through actually that the Great Britain had started using the same technology and got caught doing it with by Russia, where they used fake rocks to record conversations. Like all of it seems like an episode of something like James Bond or something like that, but in reality. It's because that's like stuff they actually do.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder. I mean, they spend a lot of time in this article talking about these kind of technologies and the subterfuge of like fake mustaches and wigs and arms and things like that. But they don't really spend a whole lot of time talking about social media, for example, or the kind of, I guess, cyber intelligence that they operate, as well as the kind of fingers that they have in mainstream media. And to me, to my mind, I guess like that would seem like these kind of like, these techniques of like changing one's appearance seem more developed towards like foreign infiltration and undercover operations. Whereas the, what is it, 60,000 employees, like how many of them are actually just operating in the United States, gathering intelligence on people here or trying to influence and sway public opinion towards things. And I can think of like how, it doesn't happen so much now, but it did. I remember when the right-wing protests in Venezuela erupted. I can't remember, several years back. It was right before the election, the presidential election. And how, if you posted anything that was like remotely, seemingly sympathetic to the PSUV, the ruling party in Venezuela, or Chavismo, that you were somehow not listening to Venezuelans. And then also, like, I remember that happened in 2019 with the coup in Bolivia. Posting anything about it being a coup, was like immediately met on Twitter or Facebook or any kind of social media with, these like crazy comments from, little accounts with like zero followers, basically bot accounts, trying to sway, public opinion, or trying to attack those who were critical of something that was, seemingly pro, US foreign policy at the time.
Well, what's interesting enough is if you look at, like, I was going to mention 2019 with Bolivia specifically because I looked at the statistics back then of like what was trending. And in the Langley area, it's not a coup, hashtag it's not a coup, which was the bot spam, was the most trending hashtag in the Langley area.
They didn't even change their IP addresses.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, like, there's some like things that like it's obviously that it's an infant program, at least as far as like changing public opinion, but they're aware they can do it.
It's just like know? Some intern sitting, some kid, like some 19-year-old intern sitting at his desk, just sending out a bot attack.
That's what I imagine it probably was at first, and then they realized everybody called them out as far as, well, and like there's people whose job it is to listen to podcasts like this and just collect information, be like, yeah, they're talking about this, they know somebody actually guessed right or something like that, you know, like anytime you hear people throwing at your conspiracy theories now, they're probably actually listening to them to be like, okay, what can we use to our advantage, you know. And I 100% think the QAnon shit has to have some freaking op like connections. It has to.
CIA friend of the show. Patreon subscriber.
I would imagine so, at least with TRN, you know.
Yeah, but also, I mean, we were talking about this earlier about like what is the purpose of this, you know, these kinds of like profiles. Like if I was an intelligence guy or a contractor, I probably, you know, like there's a photo of them working on a vehicle, their faces are hidden but their tattoos are revealed, and you know, they're like, I guess they're like removing all of the kinds of like, I guess, transmission technology in the vehicle so that it's untraceable. So that like, so it's, I don't know. It says military, the caption reads, military operators hauling out the rear of an SUV from Syria to install the power and cabling to turn the seemingly normal vehicle into a close-in intercept platform, able to eavesdrop on cell phone and walkie-talkie signals. And so if these are like, you know, the whole thing, you know, one of the justifications they have for signature reduction is to protect the identities of, you know, contractors, intelligence contractors, military contractors, as well as military personnel as well. Why would they be posing for photographs, you know, like with tattoos that you know, are a dead giveaway of their kinds of identities? So it makes me wonder the intention behind this kind of, you know, news drop in Newsweek, which you pointed out when we were off or before we hit record, also has some interesting connections to the Epstein case.
Well, yeah, so Epstein... everything related to Epstein has always been released through Newsweek. And the reporter who took the picture of his dead body, you know, that everybody's like, it looks like a fake, which it could have been.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Some people claim.
That same photographer and journalist are the people who supposedly took the picture of Ghislaine Maxwell at the In-N-Out in L.A., that turned out to be photoshopped. Mm-hmm. So when you have stuff like that, and you know that like Ghislaine Maxwell had like some huge implications with Reddit, her dad is known as like James Bond of Mossad, stuff like that, it really makes you wonder, like, what are the connections fully with the CIA to social media, especially with people like Ghislaine Maxwell, who like, for some reason, still, like, hasn't died in prison, you know? Like, if Epstein was killed, why wasn't Ghislaine? And that's if you believe that just, like, they were murdered, which I'm just saying, it's pretty impressive he broke his hyoid bone.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the whole Ghislaine Maxwell trial, you know, hasn't gone underway yet. But even, like, Melinda Gates, when she filed for divorce from Bill Gates, you know, she got ahead of the media cycle, so to speak, by releasing a statement essentially like confirming that Bill Gates was a friend of, or an acquaintance of Jeffrey Epstein, and that he had, you know, spent several, you know, evenings with him, and he even appeared on the flight logs of the Lolita Express. You know, Bill Gates later on like admitted that like that might have been the case, but he didn't know that it was Jeffrey Epstein's, like, you know, private jet. And so it makes me wonder, it's like, even with, like, the Capitol riots, everyone that's going to jail, they're all low-level people, right? They're all, like, people who probably, you know, I'm not trying to sound sympathetic to what they did or what they, you know, the things that they believe at all, but people who really don't have power, so to speak, and perhaps got duped into a larger conspiracy. I mean, it is a conspiracy, and are going to pay for it for the rest of their lives. But none of the people at the top who are responsible for it, like even Trump himself, I would say this implicates the intelligence community who sat by and did nothing, and allowed it to happen in some ways. We have yet to find out, but perhaps encourage certain acts of violence, all get a walk away from this, right? Just like Bill Gates gets to walk away from the Jeffrey Epstein case, just like, all the powerful people that, Jeffrey Epstein was associated with, whether it was Bill Clinton, or others, they get a walk away from this. Like, they are immune to these kinds of things. And I have a feeling that, this signature reduction, it's not so much about controlling or investigating the elite as much as it is about undermining foreign governments, but also potentially being used to undermine anything that challenges the status quo in the United States. Because what is that gray area? What is the continuum between peace and conflict? If that's applied to the rest of the world and they're operating domestically, it's also applied to the United States.
Well, and so, like, one of the stories I can recount that Ghislaine Maxwell supposedly was talking about at a dinner party. I can't remember who was the person. Maybe it was Virginia. But somebody mentions the story where she talks about being in Colombia firing rockets at a tank from a helicopter. And so, like, the implications, like, of, I would say, probably a U.S. operative being down there in a war we're not a part of, still killing people, means that the gray zone is very much open game for the US. And I think a lot of things that are done. I have a family member that was special ops and went to India for some reason. And like, I to this day, I need to know why we were in India, because he was like a sniper in Iraq or something like that. And so it's like, why do you need a sniper in India? And there's all these different things foreignly where, and especially like with their concern with foreign connections of domestic groups, with COINTELPRO at least, that it's obvious that the Cold War, I would say, never even ended, and we're engaging in further intensification, I guess is a good term, of, ops, I guess, for lack of a better word, in order to either, well, supposedly to counter-react Chinese ops, or more likely to counter-react to the just awakening. God, now I sound like a Q person. But like how the majority of people have become more aware of this stuff. And honestly, I would say that's part of Mockingjay, is that the media is controlling these releases in order to put out so much information that we will get confused and can't actually figure anything out. And we're just left sitting here twiddling our thumbs, like, I guess we'll never know.
Well, one of the things I think that really gets to, I don't know if it's the media so much now as it is the social media, giants, because a month ago, you could get kicked off of Facebook and Twitter for promoting the lab leak theory. And now it's all over the place, right? Because now it's the acceptable kind of like theory of how the coronavirus, was leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China. But when the right was promoting it, it was like, they considered it a conspiracy theory. I have my doubts about whether or not it was a lab leak, and I don't want to get into it here.
Oh,
But
really? Because I have a Yoden idea about
oh
it.
no,
You
I
know
don't.
that blood vial she mentions
Oh gosh, no,
that she got from China? That's
that.
it.
Well, they were like, I don't, there's a whole, there's a lot to go that goes into it, and I don't really want to get into it, but it's like. I think that's a good example of like, just like several months ago, you couldn't say this on Twitter without getting, your tweet censored or your potentially your account suspended. And now it's like now that the liberal establishment is in control, it's like it now it becomes acceptable fact. And It just shows how, these corporations, there's an alignment, in other words, between, what is considered like official US policy and the corporate, like social media giants. They work hand in glove. And that's something that freaks me out now, because now, in this era, we have, like you mentioned, oh, what was that guy's name? Jim from The Office. He does the
Jim
Jack.
from the
Yeah,
Office.
Jim from The Office. Just a regular old CIA agent, also known as Jack Ryan. The Amazon series, Jack Ryan talks. I mean, it just like openly advocates, for a CIA operation to overthrow the democratically elected government of Venezuela. Like, just in broad daylight. And there is, I would say, in this generation, and I'm not just talking about young people, I'm speaking of the time that we live in, that the acceptance of the legitimacy of the massive sprawling security and military industrial complex is so widely accepted, to the point that you were talking about the BRICS, the hideaway BRICS with receptors in them to crack, cell phones and this and that. But cell phones themselves are monitoring devices, and so too is social media. Like, we give over all of that information already, and we just trust these large corporations that they're not selling it off and or giving it away to the security state. And every report, every news story says otherwise, that the that Facebook, oper you know worked hand in hand with the FBI to investigate Black Lives Matter, people who are called black identity extremists, which isn't a far cry from the COINTELPRO designation of Black Nationalist Hate Group. But like, the extent to which that these operations, influence our daily lives, we don't really even, we don't even really know. I mean, the media, or excuse me, the tracking of metadata and the storage of metadata and our behaviors of what we buy online, what we look at, is all sold and analyzed and then sold back to us. We're so kind of like into our phones and into the social media universe that we fail to sometimes understand that this is a feedback loop. It's actually giving us information about ourselves back to us based on its interpretation of our behaviors. Who's to say that, this is also not under the prying eyes of the NSA or the CIA? That's where I kind of like really, really worry, and like the reptile part of my brain, the conspiracy part of my brain, thinks about this, that, there is this amassing of data on, everyday people, not just the people in the United States. And I don't think it's so much that they're tracking our individual, they're interested in us as individuals and what we're doing, so much as they're mapping out larger patterns of behavior. Because COINTELPRO, Operation Chaos, operated at a psychological level to control people's behavior and to make them behave in a certain way. Obviously, those programs have ended, but we will never know the state secrets of what was successful in those programs that was carried on through institutional knowledge. So that's kind of a bleak picture, but that's what I got from this Newsweek article.
I learned about this article from Beep Beep Lettuce. What's there? I mean, okay to listen to, but like, there are no name podcasts, right? And they're one of the only people I've heard talk about it. I didn't hear citations needed. Important that people like start to recognize this stuff, I guess. Because like I've noticed like there's a propagation of memes about, oh, ha 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 ha, we all have an FBI agent assigned to us. It's like, that's bad. That's people, if you're going to complain about the Stasi, this is the Stasi, but like 10 times worse because they have central databases that they can all access from their secret brick phone.
The brick phone. Actually, I want one of those.
I'm just gonna say that's like the that'd make us even more stereotypic natives talking to the rock.
Yeah, that's I was gonna make a joke about that, but I didn't think the many of our listeners would have gotten it, but
Oh, I just think it's really funny. Like, it's a rock that they keep focusing on in this entire article. It's mentioned like four times.
So we have, you know, in the works, just, you know, this is just kind of an episode to update you all on what we've been talking about and thinking about and dreaming about and having nightmares about.
For real, though.
Actually, yeah, some of this stuff does keep me up at night that we're going to get into. But, you know, we have kind of a series. We don't know how many number, you know, we don't, there's no, like, end to this. It's like the gift that keeps on giving. But I think the next time we come back, we're going to be talking about FBI informants that infiltrated movements such as the American Indian Movement and the Indigenous Movements. And looking at, you know, the circumstances that led to their rise, many of them, or several of them, were, you know, in leadership positions. I think the most famous one that comes to mind is Doug Durham. But also, like, the intelligence that they gathered and, you know, the way that they used their positions in the organization to essentially wreak havoc and to try to undermine and disrupt. We'll also be referencing, you know, the other infiltration of organizations such as, like, the Black Panther Party, but also thinking about that in a more contemporary context. And, you know, somebody like Redfawn Fallis, who was a water protector at Standing Rock, just was released from prison several months ago, had, you know, was essentially put into prison based on the gun that she got from an FBI informant who had infiltrated the camps at Standing Rock. And, you know, Redfawn Fallis is the daughter of Troy Lynn Yellowwood, a former AIM member who was also the target of an FBI operation back in the AIM days. But those are the things that we're going to be looking at. And I think our next episode might actually just be on chaos and COINTELPRO to really understand what these programs were. And the fact is, you know, I think it's wrong to say in the left community, and I've been guilty of this, to call everything a COINTELPRO operation, because COINTELPRO actually ended. It doesn't mean that the tactics weren't used or carried on in other operations, but we won't really know the successes of those operations, because even though there's been extensive Freedom of Information Act requests on FBI, you know, COINTELPRO programs, and we've kind of mapped out some basics understandings, we don't actually know the full extent to which these operations were deemed successful, the kinds of techniques that carried over that weren't revealed, the informants that infiltrated these organizations. I think at one point in time, the Ku Klux Klan had one informant for every 30 members, and that was a pretty standard kind of like ratio in some organizations. The FBI also created false left organizations, which is documented in the book A Threat of the Highest Magnitude by Aaron J. Leonard. And I don't have the book in front of me. let me look it up real
quick. Good book, though. Read it.
Yeah, I know. You should read it. It's all about FBI informants. It's A Threat of the First Magnitude. I apologize. Which is co-authored by Aaron J. Leonard and Connor A. Gallagher. And that actually begins with Lenin's Bolshevik party and how, you know, two of the top, you know, people in the Bolsheviks were actually informants for the Tsar. And then it goes into, you know, kind of more contemporary examples in the 60s and 70s. But it's a good book. And yeah, I'm excited to talk about this stuff as much as it haunts me, thinking about all the carnage and violence that has been, you know, waged against the left in this country, or even just against people who may not have had a left ideology, but were standing up for something that they felt was right and constitutionally protected, you know? So I'm excited. I don't know if you have any last words, Shugmani, too.
Not really. I'm just really excited to get deeper into this Yoden stuff so I have an outlet for how crazy some of this stuff seems. Because I think was it Paula Geese that said Durham had a fake newspaper articles made for him?
I can't remember. I'll have to, if it's in one of the books that we've read, I'll have to look in my notes. But I'm actually going to go through her papers, hopefully, in the next couple weeks. And for those of you that don't know, Paula Geese is or was she passed away, but she was an attorney or a legal aid for the Wounded Knee Offense and legal or what is it? Wounded Knee Offense.
Defense Committee, Legal Offense Defense Committee, Wickle
Yeah,
Duck.
Wickledock, which provided legal services to the people arrested after the Wounded Knee occupation in 1973. She stuck around, collected a lot of information on Doug Durham. I think her archives has the most extensive documentation of him. I'm excited to, I haven't been through all of it, so I'm excited to look through it. Also incredibly worried of all the things that might be revealed, but nonetheless, yeah. So thanks for joining us for another episode of Yoded. We'll be back hopefully next month with another bonus episode. Thanks for everyone who subscribed to the Patreon, and thanks for your patience with us as we're undergoing these kind of restructuring, reorganization. I promise things will look better in the next couple of months. We'll have more regular podcasts and Patreon episodes. But thanks so much for all your support. It means a lot. Yeah.
OSHA.
Nation is a rosebud with nowhere to
grow. My people come from the land.